This is the Mile High Five podcast with Carl Jensen and Doug Cunnington. We have authentic conversations about the journey to Phi, health, happiness, and some very odd tangents. We interview Phi experts, side hustlers, people on their way to Phi, and those who have reached the other side. Join us every week, and if you want the show notes and links and all that other stuff, head over to milehighfi.com.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Phi podcast. I'm Carl Jensen with my co-host.
I'm Doug Cunnington.
And today we have a special guest named Allison. Allison has a super interesting job. She is a nanny to high net worth people. She enjoys marathons and running, which I found out in Cincinnati after eating a double cheeseburger and drinking a beer. Allison wanted to run to the next destination, and that was pretty interesting. Allison enjoyed it more than I did. And she is also a musician. Welcome to the show, Allison.
Thank you so much.
And I was at that dinner too, and I saw you guys running, and I was like, hey, Carl, I thought we were going to like grab a car together or something. And then he just sprinted away. And I was like, what is going on? And what was going on?
So, Allison, I don't think I even told you the whole story why I really wanted to run with you. So, Doug and I had walked from the hotel to the restaurant, and we saw some... I think it was a part of Cincinnati that is still a little bit suffering, I guess. I think we saw a drug deal go down and maybe homeless people assaulting each other. I'm like, wow. And that was during the day, like broad daylight. And then it was getting dark. I'm like, holy cow, there's no way that anyone should be running alone from this destination to the next one. And it turned out the area was a lot better, and I didn't feel like our lives were in danger. Do you remember that, Doug, that walk? And there was some sketchy stuff going on.
It was a little odd. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And it was only a mile or two.
I thought we were running to the next brewery because we were trying to beat the group that decided to Uber.
We did do that. Yes, that was the purpose. But I'm not a natural runner. Ed, having the option, I probably would have either walked or taking the Uber, or had, like, I've gone on Doug's shoulder. Doug's very strong. He's got massive quads, and Doug, like, piggybacking. I just jump on there, and yeah, boom, we're at the next place in no time.
You keep me warm, too. It's great. And then the musician stuff. So what instruments do you play? What do you do?
I play guitar and sing. I learned in college. I enjoy doing some open mics, and I've had some local gigs playing Wood Brothers or Led Zeppelin, Guns N' Roses, Sublime. And I write some of my own music too.
That's really cool. You can only see one guitar over there, but there's a couple around here. And I didn't even know that you were into guitar, but it's really fun. So we'll have to talk about that later. And I guess let's get into some of the details. So I'll kick it over to you, Carl.
Yeah, so Allison, you had a super unique job. How did you get into this job, and what did you do?
So my background in teaching, my degree is in education, and I was looking for teaching jobs in like the mid-2000s and wasn't super excited about what was available at that time. And a friend told me about an agency that hires college-educated nannies, and they come from different walks of life, teachers and nurses and other, you know, backgrounds, like with, you know, sort of human resources, services. And I applied to this agency and started to get these pretty interesting job offers in different areas of the country. And it just made my career take a totally different turn.
And these are, just to be clear, these aren't just kind of wealthy people. These are very high net worth people. What was it like working for people in that category? Because I feel like I probably can't even relate to those people. Like, I have no idea what their day-to-day life is. They probably have lots of people. Well, hence you. They have people doing probably a lot of lower-level tasks for them. I'm curious. I don't know if that's even a question there. What are their lives like?
It was especially strange for me because up until that point, I'd been working with the completely other end of the spectrum. I worked at a school where 80% of the kids were like on free or reduced lunch in Appalachia in the Midwest. So to go from that to working with folks that had private jets and chefs and, you know, huge staff, was pretty mind blowing. Yeah, just my day to day, I guess everything that starts out really strange kind of becomes normal. It becomes normal to interact with security and you know, housekeepers and personal assistants. But I never really felt that different being like a middle class person. I just always kind of felt like me, and I was in this just interesting world for a little while.
So you said you didn't feel any different. It was never awkward or anything like that. Did you get to fly on the private jet?
Oh, for sure. I think it does get a little hard to go back to flying in coach after that experience.
Yeah, Southwest would kind of suck after that. You got to log on 24 hours ahead, or else you're in the C group between two people in the back of the plane next to the bathroom. That would be difficult after being on the private jet, but you get used to wherever you are. And so I'll back up a second. A lot of people probably have an image that these high net worth people are super happy and that their lives are great, and they probably paint this beautiful picture in their mind. Do you think that's the case?
I think yes and no. I think yes, in the sense that having an abundance so that you don't need to worry about your housing or food or, you know, any of the kind of many day-to-day worries that so many Americans are thinking about at top of mind. But no, in the sense that the wealth doesn't negate the navigating the complications of relationships with spouses or children or friends. I think that the oft-cited statistic is like after you get to something like $70,000 of income, that the bulk of your happiness has already been reached, because you're taking care of like basic necessities. And beyond that, it's much less dramatic. But I think it's hard to imagine having the wealth to be able to do pretty much anything you'd want. And I think that it's hard to say that wouldn't be pretty cool.
When you actually, how long ago was it when you first got your very first gig?
It was in 2004.
Okay. So can you remember back? It's 20 years ago, right? So can you remember back? Because I feel like it would be kind of weird the first time, because like you're showing up and there's like other staff there and they're kind of used to it. Maybe they've been doing it for a little while, but you show up and you're a nanny, right? So you're living there. Was it just kind of weird adjusting, coming from wherever or whatever you were doing before and where you were living, to be placed in that? Day one of a job is always weird. It's like the first day of school. You're like, are the people going to like me? Like, what's going to happen? So how was that? If you can remember back, obviously it's a long time ago, but any feelings or thoughts about it?
I think it was weird, and it never really stopped being so. I grew up in a middle-class family, and you typically go through like a phone interview, and then you do like a working interview, maybe for a couple days, weekend. And then if you get the job as a live-in nanny, for me, you just kind of show up there and you're expected to acclimate to this whole community. And it was always unique, because every family was different, every living situation was different, all the staff. And, you know, in a pretty short period of time, you just have to kind of seamlessly fit into that. So that's something that for over the course of 20 years, it never really changed. It's always like, well, where am I living now? And is it a guest house, or it's in their house, or, you know, who are the people that I'm working with, and all their personalities? And it was always challenging.
What did you learn from this job? And it could be about money, it could be about relationships, or anything else, anything interesting that you noticed that you took away.
One thing I realized early on was kind of what I said before about people having problems no matter what net worth level you're at. And sometimes that can, you know, complicate things further. But I had a sense of wanting to kind of maintain my identity and where I came from throughout, and not have any of these jobs or opportunities like overly change me or kind of where I came from. Like there were so many great opportunities to interact with unique folks, people kind of get caught up in that world and not necessarily, you know, feel happy going back to just kind of their regular life. And that was something that I really have always tried to cultivate, like having, you know, my friendships and relationships outside of work and just sort of the normalcy of day-to-day life. Cause it is just such a small little niche slice of life that I don't think is necessarily healthy to just try to overly identify with.
So I've got one more follow-up question for you about this. We're not going to say any of the people who you work for, but I'm sure not all of them came from wealth. Some of them probably came from more average means and then became rich for whatever reason, became wealthy. I would like to think, and maybe I'm deceiving myself here, that if I had that kind of net worth, I would still be the same. So I'm kind of curious, do you think money changes people and how does it? And I'm sure it changes people. It's foolish to say that it doesn't. These people aren't taking care of their children because they're taking care of their children, but they have help in the form of you. And I'm sure they're not cleaning their cars or whatever. Yeah. So I guess, how have you seen money change people?
You know, I haven't been privy to the folks that I've worked for, like their kind of journey upward to the abundance that they have now. So I haven't known them before the wealth. So it's hard to say how it would be different, but I would anticipate that, like all things you're saying, as your life changes, you can outsource more things that would inevitably give you a different perspective. I mean, I think any level of wealth is bound to make you think about different things. And I've talked with a lot of people in my inner circle, the things that I worried about, and, you know, like my early 20s are a little bit different than now. Like I have old journals of scrawling in the margins, you know, going over my minutes on a cell phone plan, and that was a huge stressor. Versus now, I'm not really worried about my cell phone. So I don't know if for people that have this immense wealth, does it just become those items are just bigger ticket items? Well, now we're worried or not worried about our transportation or what kind of hotel we're staying at, or just any, you know, just take any metric and like make it bigger.
I want to go a little deeper on what you learned. And I'm curious about how some of your, do you call them clients or what were they? Clients, right?
I guess clients.
Yeah. Families. So these families, right? They had this abundance of money, probably more than they imagined that they were going to have when they were younger, especially if they grew up in middle class or lower middle class type families. So did you learn anything about how they spent money? Or I'll give you a couple options in case there's a more fruitful answer here, or how they made decisions that we could apply. Obviously, most of us can't get the private jet, which would make travel so much easier, but maybe we can learn something that sort of applies to everyone on either how they spend money or make decisions around finances.
I definitely saw a sense of, you know, not sweating the small stuff, but the small stuff are things that was hard for me to imagine before working with this population. Like one example was we were supposed to take a trip with one of the families, and it just didn't work out for, you know, timing. And so the entire vacation was scrapped, and there were a lot of costs that were already, you know, prepaid for. And that's something that would, for me, have sent me into tons of anxiety about like sunk costs. And it was just something that they didn't worry about. But I guess at a more normative level, we could not worry so much about smaller amounts of, well, if there's a night of a hotel that isn't used because plans change or not necessarily optimizing for, the car rental or, the dinner place you get, or I think that there's a level where worrying about a sunk cost just kind of becomes not a worthwhile use of time. That's definitely something that I've struggled with in the past. And I think that seeing some of these folks not worry about if, plans change and the money's already spent, then it's like, well, that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm
that's
with
really
you.
For me.
That's a tough one, especially like the vacation thing or, something where you booked it like a long way ahead of time and then like things changed and you're like, oh man, that's $3,000 down the drain. And I'm curious, right. Carl, right? Like, so you have a relatively high net worth, I'll give you that compliment.
Thanks, Doug.
But how has that shifted over time for you with sunk costs? Can you think of an example maybe in the last year where you were like, you know what, our plans changed, but it's actually not that big of a deal, where whatever, 5-10 years ago or 15 years ago, you would have really stressed out about losing whatever, $1,500 or $500 or $20, or like the amount doesn't matter. Like it's a moving target, right?
Yeah. So I have a good answer and a bad answer to this question. Which one do you want first?
Let's do the bad answer. That sounds more interesting.
So the bad answer is I still think I focus way too much on losing stuff. And the quick and easy answer is food. Like Mindy doesn't like leftovers for some reason, and neither do our kids. So a lot of them end up getting. I know, right?
You're those people.
Shit, they're those people. I'm going to throw them right under the bus right now because that drives me nuts. I do not like food waste, and it goes to this extent. Like I was at a restaurant maybe a year ago having breakfast, and for whatever reason, these people at the table next to us kind of, it looked like they picked at their food and then all left. I don't know if they had an emergency. I'm like, oh my God, I kind of want to like take their breakfast home too. It makes me so sad to see that and disturbs me. And maybe that's more of an emotional thing and not a money thing. So that's the bad one. I can't stand
that. You took the food home. No,
I thought about taking other people's food home. But my food, there's no way I'm ever leaving that, dude. They've got a box. And one friend was like, yeah, I'm kind of embarrassed to ask for a box. I'm like, hell, why? Like, shit, who cares? Anyway, one good one though is like for FinCon, I had to cancel because the kids got sick, and I guess I didn't even think about the sunk cost. I was a little bit disappointed and not going because I wouldn't get to see our group of friends and spend time with you, of course, Doug. That was the main thing. I cried a little bit over that, but I didn't think much about the money. I think we lost the first night of the hotel, so we were probably out, and the tickets. So I guess we got free tickets because we were on the panel, but.
Oh, they didn't make you reimburse? You got me to thank for that, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Doug. Yeah, and I appreciate you.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great one. And then it's funny with the leftovers. And I guess it's maybe how you're brought up. And maybe I don't know why Mindy and your kids don't like. I mean, the kids learned it from Mindy, of course. Bad habit. You guys should do a whole show on Mindy on Money about leftovers versus not leftovers. But like I grew up. I mean, I basically, like, for the last week, I've just been eating leftovers. Like, I'll make a huge batch of food, eat leftovers. But my mom from the Philippines, she would always have, she would put, like, 5 French fries in her, like, wrap it in a napkin, put it in her purse, and we'd be traveling. She was like, oh, you want a snack? Where'd you get these fries from? It's like, oh, it's from lunch. She wouldn't save anything. It was crazy, man. Allison, are you a leftovers person?
So I guess it depends on how long people are keeping leftovers.
Yeah, you gotta eat the cleans.
I think there's a limit. I'm absolutely fine with next day leftovers. Beyond that, I think there's probably a freshness factor. But if I have food I haven't eaten at a restaurant, I'm definitely bringing it home.
For sure. All right. And the other thing I've recently implemented just in the last year is, we have a lot of leftovers, but I'll use masking tape. I worked at a restaurant for off and on here and there. So you label it. You label what it is. You face it out. You put the date on there. Eat it within 5 days or 7 days or whatever is appropriate for the food. Further, there's some food that's better as leftovers and like enzymes activate and do things and actually make it better. So we're talking things like beef roast or like chili or other chicken adobo, a couple other things like that, where it actually enhances the flavor the second or the second, third day. You ever experienced that?
Yes, I have. A casserole, sometimes the food absorbs the taste of the other food or maybe some kind of potato casserole thing. But yeah, totally true.
Yeah, we could do a spinoff where we just talk about the food that we're eating and different leftovers. Maybe we just eat. We eat on the show. I love the food shows. So get us back on track, Carl. What are we even talking about?
Okay, so I have a question for both of you. Doug, you are going to go first. It is a two-part question for you, Doug. If you had 100x your current net worth, what would your life look like? And would you invite me to fly on your private aircraft?
Right, 100x. I think there'd be a lot for me to process. I think I might get a new car. My car is a little old. I still have like manual windows, no power locks. Not everything's working on it. I mean, it's a little rough. So I would maybe upgrade to like a 10-year-old car. And we mentioned it the other week, Carl. While I do love cooking, I maybe would have some sort of meal delivery service, not like the, you know, where you have to cook it, but for specific macros where I know I will have like this diet for X amount of time. I think that could be an interesting thing. It's actually within our, I mean, it's kind of expensive, but it's within our reach to get now. Other than that, I can't think of any huge, massive things other than like traveling more. We did talk about if we won the lottery. I think there was a very big jackpot recently. And we like road trips, but there's some stress involved. So we thought, what if we got like a tour bus that Led Zeppelin or, you know, fill in the blank, a nice tour bus where we had an awesome like living space. We had a driver. Maybe we even have a gym in there so we could work out and just have a very comfortable, like slow paced travel. I suspect that's fairly expensive to have like a little outfit where someone's taking care of all the stuff and organizing it. So a couple little things like that, but that's about it from like a day-to-day standpoint, I think.
Okay, cool. So you'd stay in the same house. You're not going to move or anything like that?
Not immediately, but that would be potentially we'd finish the basement, but we're using it as a studio right now. So yeah, I can't think of anything immediately. You'd have to give me more time to think about it.
Okay.
So yeah.
I would definitely do the early bird check-in on Southwest. I think it costs like $20 and you automatically get in the A group. That would totally be worth it. Allison, how would your life change if you had 100x your current net worth?
I just got my first new car of like my whole life a couple months ago. So I probably wouldn't need to upgrade the car. It's so funny. After driving like clunkers for so long, just like the little bump up of purchasing a car new, I think I'm going to get a lot of dividends from that for a very long time. It still feels like a way fancier person's car than I should be driving. I don't think I'd have a jet. I think I'd probably do like that NetJets thing where you can like buy time to fly on one. It saves on a lot of maintenance costs. And I would have, I think I would probably have like a personal masseuse.
Oh, smart.
Get a massage every day. Sounds amazing. Would help with the marathon training too.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. A personal trainer would be a great one. Like find someone who you really connect with, someone who's going to yell at you at the gym. And man, I would.
I could yell at you at the gym. Done. What about you? What's your life going to be like?
Oh, so besides the early bird check-in, which would be totally worth it. It's only like $20. I guess I could do that now. I would probably get the personal trainer and I don't care about having a nice hotel room because I'm never there, but maybe like when we traveled, stay in more resorty type places that had amenities like pools or a nice ground where it just feels good to hang out at the property itself. Mm. I guess some of the FinCons have been like that, like this big expansive thing with pools and lazy rivers. I get value out of that.
Nice.
That's fun.
I think the hard part with this exercise is the scope of how much more money that is. because, yeah, what I'm thinking, yeah, it's like hundreds of millions of dollars, right? So it's just like, fuck, I have no idea how much money that is, right? Or what you could do with that, because we're like operating on this like much lower level. So I don't even know what's possible. I could probably like spend in a way that makes it feel like frivolous, and I wouldn't even make a dent in it. And then it would take me a little while to realize how much more frivolous I could actually be.
One thing that all three of us said
would be frivolous.
Right. Yeah.
One thing that all three of us said, which I think is interesting, like Allison, you said the net jets, Doug, you said the bus, I said a personal trainer, and maybe the early bird check-in for Southwest. It's not big objects. It's things that make our life a little bit easier, and maybe not even our day-to-day life, maybe vacation life, but like the net jets, that'd be so much more pleasant to travel on a small jet. You don't have to have people throwing up next to you, which has happened to both Doug and I recently on flights.
That's happened to me recently too.
Yeah. So you eliminate that. You probably don't have to get to the airport as early. It's just going to be a better experience. But none of us said like a bigger house, or I guess you said a new car, but you're not going to go out and buy a Rolls Royce. You're probably going to buy, I don't know, a Camry or something like that.
Do I so look like I drive a Camry? I feel like that's an insult. Sorry to all the Camry owners out there, but Carl, I thought of one for you. You should buy a small construction company or a general contracting company. And I can't remember, I think it's in the sound check, but for the people that maybe don't listen all the way through, Carl's covered in paint. It looks like there's oil under his fingernails, or I'm not sure. But I think that would be a good way. I mean, you would buy back convenience and time. And I'm giving you a hard time, but like to outsource that stuff where money's no object. Because I know it's hard to get folks to show up and all that. But if you own the company, then you're just like, guys, gals, like paint the fucking fence or whatever, do the work, and then you won't have to.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Or just offer like a good contractor 2x their pay. Just come over and do this thing this afternoon and I'll pay you twice. You're right. Yeah. I'm covered in paint. I had a fight with a paint sprayer yesterday and just digging holes for trees this morning. Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Okay. Want to move on to the next part? Allison, we met you at Economy, which is a conference, I would say loosely based on financial independence and the ideas around that. How did you first discover financial independence?
So I was in my early 20s, and it was, you know, pre-blogs, pre-podcasts, and I was really stressed thinking about how I was going to become a teacher, and I wasn't thinking I was going to have very much earning potential, and I just got really into thinking, well, how do people make this work when they have like a low to moderate income, and just went to the library and found Your Money or Your Life, which is, you know, now kind of like one of the seminal texts of the FAIR community, and read that and had the mind-blowing moment of, you know, trading your life energy for money and you know, saving, and how you can really optimize, you know, shorten your work life if you choose to. And I'd never heard of anything like that in my entire life. So it was 22, 23. That just set me off on wanting to read as much upper finance as possible. But I didn't really have a super big goal of what I wanted to do with the savings or investing. But as I got more into reading about all these topics, then it became kind of more obvious of, okay, I want to try to optimize to, you know, have more freedom in my 40s. So yeah, just, it was really 20 years ago that sort of had that mind blowing moment and led to reading everything else and wanting to be part of this group.
Did you make any changes sort of, we'll say in your early to mid-20s, based on reading that book? And then did you have any other jumping off books or pieces of information that helped inform what you were doing if you made those changes?
So I did all the old school FIRE movement was, I think, a lot of, you know, saving the most and constantly optimizing. And I would say a good chunk of my 20s was doing everything I could to reduce my expenses as low as possible. And you know, blogs like Mr. Money Mustache and Early Retirement Extreme definitely played a part in that. I think those came out when I was right around 30. But since then, I've gotten much more into the kind of the value spending mindset. And Brad talks a lot about this on his podcast too. Well, a lot of finance podcasters are focusing on this now, where kind of treating yourself more to the things that you're passionate about and then, you know, cutting back on things you don't. So, for example, I have a nice Taylor guitar and I don't have very many clothes and they're not, you know, fancy. I just don't care about that. So I think initially it was cut back on everything to the nth degree. And over time, it became much more nuanced and it became much more enjoyable too.
So it's pretty interesting how you said you discovered this whole thing because you knew you weren't going to be making a lot of money and you wanted to figure out money because of that. So you've probably, even though you made less, maybe that's the reason you'll have a higher net worth now. Do you agree with that? I guess another way to put that question is if you came out of college or university as an engineer making tons of money, do you think your life would have gone down the same path or where do you think you'd be now?
I've wondered about that and right. It's like where, you know, kind of what starts first. Are you coming into a career where you have lots of money and so you can spend lots of money and then you just worry about the future later? Or in my case, it was something that I felt I had to think about really early on. I think that I might have felt a little more comfortable with just kind of spending on whatever if I had a higher income. I do think that feeling some of those constraints maybe did help. I guess I never really thought about that before. Maybe it really did help in having a plan. But when I think back, like when I've calculated like my, you know, like lifetime average earnings over 20 years, and it's only like works out to like $60,000. It's so moderate. Flabbergasted at the nature of like compound interest and everything. I think it took a long time for me to think like, does this really work?
Yeah. Interesting. So about 60K over the last 20 years or so. And as you were a nanny for most of that time, I think, how did that impact your expenses? Because like your living is taken care of most likely. I'm not sure. Can you explain the economics and your expenses and how it worked as a nanny?
So the biggest boost for me was as a live-in, not having those housing expenses for a significant amount of time. Just take that off the table, right? So even a modest income, if you're not spending on housing and all those associated costs, is huge. And I think that's why I didn't feel particularly deprived, as I was living in, you know, interesting cities that had a lot to offer when I was off duty in activities. And I just didn't have to worry about this, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 rent per month. So it was a major hack over 20 years to have done that.
Doug, this sounds like it could be a side hustle for you. I know you don't have kids, but you could be like the dog whisperer to the high net worth group or something like that. Like you could come in there and take really good care of their dog. They're not going to have time to take their dog for walks or groom them or feed them, but that could be you. You could be the dog version of Allison.
I think you're right. Funny enough, it was about 10-ish years ago, but we actually like dog and house sat for some of our friends who were, yeah, I guess they weren't super high net worth, but they were like, they lived in nice neighborhoods. I'll leave it at that just to be a little bit vague. But yeah, it was awesome. We were in like these great houses with like awesome kitchens and it was pretty great. And yeah, we would walk the dogs and take care of the pets or whatever. So
yeah, I see a future where you're flying on private jets with like a couple Labradors. It'll be awesome.
Pets on jets.
Pets on jets. That's great. That could be the name of the company. Quick, see if the URL is taken.
Yeah, we got to get that one. All right. So, Allison, I want to ask you about guitars because I'm into it. So I have a National over there. You mentioned your Taylor. Are you mostly an acoustic player?
Yes.
Okay. And then, yeah, what other guitars do you have or like what's on your like dream list?
I guess that's kind of when we talk about what would you change based on, you know, X amount more money. I'm so happy with my Taylor GS Mini. It's probably the nicest guitar I've had. I had a little Martin at one point, but it just, yeah, it sounds great and rich and warm. And I get attached to this instrument, so I don't think I want to make a change. I don't really dream of another one, but we'll see.
That's good. Yeah, I got those Taylors are great. I have short arms, like a T-Rex, sort of, to break it down in terms Carl can understand. Short arms, but that size is great because it's like a 23-inch scale, so it's a little bit smaller. And I ended up getting a Gibson LG2, which is a longer scale, but it's also a small body, so it's a little more comfortable. But I enjoyed getting it so much that I started buying other guitars. So a couple of the others are 12 fretters, which are, again, a little smaller. And I think, is that part of the reason why that one feels so good to you is, like, it kind of just it fits right in your arms well?
Yeah, I think as I have, like, really small hands, and I think that it helps a lot with the playability. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge reason.
What is your favorite Guns N' Roses song to play?
Patience.
I knew you were going to say that.
Nice.
It's such a great song, though. I was just listening to it yesterday. I love how it changes at the very end, like two-thirds of the way through it pivots. And
so not good. A lot of songs have, you know, whistling.
Not enough. Yeah. Are you a good whistler? Do you whistle that song? Can you do it?
It's funny because I've performed it so much, and I always have anxiety of, like, if I haven't drank enough water and if I'm going to, like, purse my lips getting ready to whistle, if the sound's going to come out or not. I get so worried about that. Most of the time, I can whistle that intro pretty well. But once in a while, it's like...
I was going to say, we won't ask you to do it here. That's far too much pressure. So, moving on. What are you frugal on? So it sounds like you came up trying to suppress some of your expenses. You're now looking at more like value spending and really understanding what you're getting out of it. What are you still frugal on?
I'm still relatively frugal on food. I feel like I've found what I consider is a good go-between. So I don't personally find a lot of value in, like, super, super high-end restaurants. But I also never been, like, a, you know, rice and beans, just, you know, the bare bones person. So my hack is I really love getting lunch at, like, the Whole Foods hot bar or salad bar or, like, their fresh case items. So much so that, like, a lot of my friends tease me about they'll be in a different city and they're like, oh, they had a really great Whole Foods there. Like, you would have loved it. So this is not an ad for Whole Foods. Or it's not even just them. It's like any high-end grocery store of which I spent a lot of my adult life living in California. There are many. Yeah, I love the ability to, like, go and get a small box and then you can get a little bit of like scoops of whatever you want. And then it's like $10. So it's like tzatziki and, you know, get your greens and whatever proteins you want. Where else can you do that? Like, it's amazing.
It's great. And it's all by weight. I thought about
it. It's all by weight. Yeah. You gotta, like, not make that too, you know, too heavy. You have to really, I kind of play a game where I like to try to see if I can keep it under $10.
I haven't been to one of those in a while, but I lose the game, the $10 game that you're describing. And now I'm eating so much protein, it would cost me a fortune getting out of there. Do you go to those often, Carl? Or?
I never been to one until I talked to Allison at Economy who mentioned it. So since that conversation, I have been there and I look at it every time I go. And I never know what to get. Like, all the food looks so good, so I'll usually get the tiny box, so I'm kind of restricted. But then there's like 10 different things in there, and I'm trying to keep them separate so I can taste each one separately. I realize I'm doing this all wrong, but
the key is you want to get things that gel together in the small box. Like, you just kind of want to have them all work together so you don't have to worry about separation. Just throw it all in there.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then would the family consider that leftovers is coming in a box, you know? How do they view that?
You know, it's funny. My kids went there, like, we were out, and they had leftovers from the Whole Foods hot bar, which is weird. Like, just get enough to eat, like, at that point, and then don't get any more. But sure enough, there were leftovers that sat in the refrigerator for, like, 5 days. I'm like, eat these. Why did you get this much? And the other kid's like, oh, yeah, she spent, like, $20 on this because she got all this. I'm like, ugh. It's a disaster. You need to come over and be an advisor to us, like one of those shows.
I'm also pretty frugal on clothing, like maybe not to the extent of Carl with his Costco wardrobe, but I mean, I'm from Ohio originally, and so the whole like TJ Maxx, Marshalls is strong with this one. Like, that's just like, I feel like that's almost part and parcel of him being from the Midwest. Where'd you get that? TJ Maxx.
Right.
$10. It's a thing.
And if I remember right, you have the same, like if you like something, you'll buy several of them. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I upgraded recently to like really nice workout clothes. One of my best friends was telling me, she's like, oh, you just have like these, you know, kind of ratty workout clothes. And, you know, it's an activity you do almost every day. Like, you should invest in some really nice gear. So I finally upgraded, and I got like four of the exact same outfits. So I just have like, I'm like a running ninja. It's just all in black, just black tank top, black tights, black shoes.
Nice. That's exactly what Carl
wears.
I never
have to decide.
No, I'm just kidding. So, well, that's great. And I do the same thing. And actually I was just over at the Dick's Sporting Goods, and they had, I mean, I'll spend the money if it's something that I like, something was marked down. I think it was like an unfavorable color. So obviously they weren't moving them. They were in my size, but I bought two of them because I'm just like, I don't want to make the decision. If I like this thing, I can get five of them and then it's good to go.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great way to do it. And you mentioned it too, Carl, even your Costco stuff, right? You'll get like 5 or 6 or 10 t-shirts or whatever comes in the textile shirts. Is that right?
Yeah. The shirt I'm wearing now is one example of it. Just the plain white t-shirt from Costco. 3-pack is like $14. And if they get trashed like I do, this one should probably be in the trash, but I can use it for my painting adventures.
Yeah. It's great. It's a good way to do it.
Cool. Allison, are you and your partner on the same page with money?
So we both grew up middle class, and I think we are for the most part. He's totally fine with restaurant spending, but much more than I would really care to do. But I think we do a good job sort of giving each other our choices and you know, kind of what we want to spend on. I definitely am more of like spa person. We just kind of joke with each other of, we talk about, you know, like in the finance community, the concept of lifestyle creep. And so if somebody spends more than sort of be typical, it's like, oh, you know, giving in the creep. Okay, you do you. and if we're kind of being more frugal on something, it's resisting the creep. So it's just sort of like an ongoing kind of joke of, if you're either resisting or giving into the creep. But we're pretty similar on that.
Do you have any examples where, I guess you kind of gave one, but do you have any other examples where you guys are diverging a little bit, where it's like, I want to get these workout clothes. Like, I spend all this time and whatever. It's like, I'm just making it up, but it's like $90 leggings or something.
He did kind of laugh at like getting like Lululemon tights.
Yep.
but then after I've, you know, been wearing them constantly, he's like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. And then I'm fine with having like an older phone. Like, I had a 3-year-old phone for a while, and he's like, just, you know, just get the new iPhone, like just go do it. Or I had a, you know, my old Honda Civic for for a significant amount of time. And he's like, you know, just get another car if you want it. Like, it's funny the things that people worry about versus they just don't think about it at all. But for the most part, we're on the same page. Plane travel has changed a little bit. We have we travel on United, and so we have like some status on there. And so now it's like, oh, if you don't at least get, it's like the seats behind first class are called bulkhead. So it's like, oh, if you don't at least have bulkhead, then you have to be in way back in the plane. And I used to never think about that, but now, or if we like occasionally we'll get the upgrade, and we both love that.
Yeah, that's definitely worth it. Just that little extra leg room. And then the bulkhead seats, I mean, those are really nice. You can like kick your legs out at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We have a sponsor today, our friends over at Ghostbed. And they actually have a new product out that I want to mention here. And it's a massage topper, which is pretty cool. And actually, Carl and I both have one of these, and it's pretty amazing. I know we mentioned, or Allison, you mentioned the massage. Do you regularly get massages out there?
I do. I try to get it at least once a month, but now with the marathon training, I might up that a little bit more often for recovery.
It's pretty good. And then, Carl, when's the last time you got a massage?
I have never had a massage.
You've never had one? We should get like a couple's massage the next place we go, man.
Let's do it.
Go to a spa. And yeah. I think that'll be nice. They put cucumbers on your eyes sometimes, right? I see that on TV shows.
Huh. Sounds great.
So Ghostbed has this great massage topper, and it's pretty cool. There's 7 preset massage and stretching and meditation programs, which is cool. It vibrates. It has some heat components in there. And Carl, have you busted yours out yet?
I have not. Actually, funny enough, before I got here this morning, we took it out of the box and set it up, but I did not have a chance to try it yet. How about you, Doug?
It's amazing. The cool thing is you could put it like on top of your bed, and you can like have it under your sheets and stuff, but you could also just kind of have it as we'll call it like an auxiliary piece of massage tools around your house. It was a horrible sentence, but basically you could throw it on your couch, right? Like we have a nice big sectional couch where you could lay down. So you could set it up there. You could set it on the floor. Like if I want Georgie to swing by and lick my face while I'm getting massage, I could do that. So it's very versatile, and you could just kind of move it wherever you need it to be.
Have you tried the meditation programs? And if so, what are those?
I haven't tried those. So I don't know what they are.
Okay.
But that's a dead end. Yeah.
I know it's got a remote control, and it's got an app on it too. So I can't wait to try it, and maybe it'll inspire me to revive my meditation practice. So I'm super curious about that.
It comes with a travel bag and washable cover as well. So you can, you know, let your guest use it. I know you have a lot of people swinging through your house. It's like a motel sort of, right?
Yeah, it is. It is a low budget motel. Doug, and I'm kind of nervous about getting a massage, you know, having strangers touching me, that's kind of awkward, but maybe we could break it in by doing a couple's ghost bed massage date. We'll just set up both our pads on a big mattress, and we'll lay next to each other. We can get the cucumbers or whatever the hell you're talking about.
That's a great idea. Yeah, we can definitely get some cucumbers. And the thing is, Ghost Bed has a ton of other stuff. They have mattresses, bed frames, they have bundles of those things, bedding, pillows, and accessories. They also have a Venus Williams line that you could check out. And you could head over to ghostbed.com/milehighfi to save 50%. And Carl even has one of their, is it just their classic mattress? I forget the name of it.
Yes, that's it, the classic.
You have one of those in your guest quarters down below. We'll call it down below.
Yeah, and BJ, our past guest, was the first one to break it in, and he loved it.
He said it helped his back pain, but he didn't say that as a doctor or a physician. That was just his own personal opinion. We have to be clear about that. And thanks a lot to Ghostbed.
Yes.
So Allison, I met you and Carl met you at Economy. And I think I was standing there with a beer, like most of the time when I'm at Economy, I have a beer in my hand. And we were at the brewery and you walked up and you're like, hey, what's going on? And it turns out Economy was your first conference. It was your first FI event. why did you go? What made you pull the trigger? Because you traveled quite a distance and basically didn't really know anyone that was going to be there, right?
Correct. I think I just got a little bit tired of having my interaction with the finance community being through books and blogs and just kind of being a passive listener instead of a participant. And with the transition into, you know, I've been a year out from my last job and I'm still kind of figuring out if that's going to be a more permanent change or not. But I really wanted to interact and make some more friends in the community. So that was the biggest motivation. It's like, wow, I've just been sort of lurking on these blogs and podcasts for a really long time without knowing any of these folks.
Were you nervous?
So nervous.
Really? About what? Like what specifically?
Nervous.
Okay. Like the crowd or what gave you anxiety?
I think I actually have a fair amount of social anxiety, but I think I try to overcome it by just sort of being a little bit silly. But I didn't know if people would be really that friendly or, you know, if their online persona was going to match anything of who they in real life, if they just be like, oh, like, why is this new person coming up and talking to me? And everybody else I felt like would know each other. And it just definitely felt like the new kid. And I was pleasantly surprised to be so welcomed into it. Most other scenarios, I don't think that experience would have been so seamless.
It seems kind of weird to have Allison say that, but it's because I've gone to so many of them that it's just old hat. Now I'm socially awkward as well. But now that I think back on it, I remember going to my first Camp Fi and I was freaking out. I'm like, man, like I got to hang out with like 60 strangers. This is going to be the weirdest thing ever. And like this sounds horrible, but then it's great. And now I love these things. So I'm so happy that you had a positive experience as well. How about you, Doug? Did you think it was weird to go to your first event just with a bunch of like money nerd type people?
It wasn't too bad for me. I cheated partially because I went with you and you treated me like your son. You know, you brought me in because I'm that much younger than you. Now, you took me under your wing a little bit, Carl. And we had the show already. So like a handful of people knew me. So I sort of cheated. So it wasn't too bad. However, that said, I have gone to events and other conferences where I didn't know people. And it is slightly terrifying. Like you said, the social anxiety. And I wouldn't say like, oh, I get social anxiety or whatever. But if there's like a shitload of people that you don't know, and like you could tell there's little groups or whatever, it can be a little awkward. The weird thing is like after going to more events, I know you can just kind of walk up to a group, introduce yourself. And it was always like this, by the way. You just introduce yourself. And if it works, you'll chat with them for a while. And if it doesn't, there's like a bunch of other, there's dozens of other groups that you could go try it with. And then maybe you find a group you click with. So yeah, I think most people, if you're going to a conference.
The format was really cool.
Yeah.
Of economy as well, because it was like a nice mixture of the speakers and the small groups and then, you know, brewery hangouts. And we had that urban hike. So I thought that was really a great way to just have there be a bunch of different venues and ways to meet people. So yeah, I was really impressed by that.
Cool. Did you feel like you were in a cult at any point?
Only one that I wanted to be in.
So the basement ceremony with the basement ceremony with like the sheep sacrifice, that wasn't weird or anything like that. The blood.
No, that's a par for the course.
Cool. Glad. Sometimes it's awkward for people. No, I'm just kidding. None of that happens.
No, I really loved it. I was actually pleasantly surprised that the most of the conversations were really about, you know, the psychology of just, gosh, we're all kind of in this place of life where maybe we have some more options than we did 10 or 20 years ago. And What does that feel like? And what does it mean? That, I guess that's, I don't know if I could have articulated it before I went, but I think that's what I was really going for, is just to be around other people that I felt like sort of understood where what my background was and why I was trying to do what I was trying to do, you know, with finances. And then you can kind of get past all that and talk about hobbies and friends and family and travel. And it's just sort of this like weird taboo thing. Like, yeah, let's just get that out of the way and get to other good stuff. I love that.
In your normal, like, local community, do you know anyone else that follows whatever, like the FI mindset or early retirement or anything sort of related to this lifestyle, I'll put in air quotes, or cult, you know?
not really. I mean, there's certainly friends and family, and some are, you know, more frugal than others. But as far as the whole, you know, going down the rabbit hole of like your savings and your investing and how that's changing maybe the calculus of your work life and length of career and everything, I hadn't met anybody in person. So now I have all these new friends, and it's interesting. It's making me a little more willing to be myself, I think, in my regular life, in air quotes, because I think I feel more comfortable being like, it's not just me.
Well, you mentioned like your family and friends. Have you influenced any of them to like do a little bit more saving or just review of their finances so they may be in a better position in the future?
I think my mom was definitely more of a more spendy person when I was younger. She has since like took over managing her finances, and I think thinks a lot more about what she's spending on. And we've been pretty transparent with each other about just, you know, a lot of those decisions. And I have a couple friends, actually a friend that I talked to right before I jumped on this podcast that also lives in Ohio. And she's become more familiar with some of the FI concepts and has changed jobs more freely because she has the freedom to do so. So yeah, I think it's great when you can kind of have that ripple effect and feel the comfort. And there's a comfort and closeness being able to talk about these things. We just typically are not encouraged to do that, but it affects our lives so much. And it's so great to be able to have a community to figure some of this out in the context of, I love it.
So you went to economy, you met a couple people, you ended up on stage for a live podcast recording, which was on Earn and Invest and Choose FI. Those are big shows. And I'm curious if anyone in your life heard the show and then realized it was you and then said, oh, I didn't know you were into this stuff. Did anyone come out of the woodwork?
I don't really have a big social media presence or a huge friend group. Probably part of that is because for the last 20 years, I've been, you know, working a ton and working in environments where I couldn't really discuss a lot of those topics. So nobody came out of the woodwork, but I did share the podcast with people in my life. And I think they were kind of surprised that, you know, it's this reveal of like, wow, this isn't just you being kind of a frugal person. This is like a really big part of your life. And you went to this event, like, this is a really big part of my personality and how I've lived my life for a very long time. It's like a coming out. It's like coming out of the FI closet.
Did anything surprise you at economy?
I think the biggest thing that surprised me was how down to earth and friendly everyone was. Yeah, as I said before, I was definitely concerned that everyone would have, you know, known everybody else, and they would have just been kind of in their own little cliquey groups and not welcomed newcomers, but it seems like there's something about being on this journey and then meeting other people, and it's just, you're just kind of automatically a part of it. I didn't see any evidence of people really leaving anybody out. Everybody just kind of hangs together really well, and that was great. Yeah, that's still shocking me even months later.
Super cool. Do you have plans to go to any more events, Economy again, or a campfire, or anything else?
I definitely would like to go to Economy next year. I'm keeping an eye on the campfire events to see kind of what's closest to me and what fits in with some of our other activities. Maybe FinCon. Is that November?
October.
But I've thought about FinCon. And if you guys have any feedback on, you know, what you'd recommend for the next event, I'm open to that.
Ooh, I think Camp Fies are pretty fun because they're a bit like Economy, but a lot smaller and more intimate, maybe less presentations, more hangout time, but still lots of smart people to talk to. FinCon is a little bit different in that the primary purpose is for creators, and that might be up your alley as well. But I mean, Doug and I, we go mostly to hang out. Like, we're not going to most of the sessions. It is kind of similar to Economy, a lot of these things, and that there are lots of fun events and great hallway conversations, but that one has a little bit more of a business focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And okay, helpful now.
I think the venues for FinCon are typically, they're a little nicer. They're usually like hotels that handle like big conferences and stuff. So the amenities are pretty nice, usually in a city. So there's something interesting. It's in Atlanta this year. I'm from Atlanta, so I'm going to be visiting family a little bit too while I'm down there. But I think it's pretty fun. It's worth checking out if you are interested in the content creation side and that sort of thing. Let's move on to this section that we call life. So I think you said your last gig was about a year ago. So you've been kind of chilling. What have you been up to these last few months?
So it's funny because in like the year since I've had my last position, I feel like I've kind of gone through all the emotions of like elation of having, you know, time freedom and I'm going to do whatever I want and I'm going to do all the things, but then also feeling some anxiety about, you know, what if I have a day where I'm not training for the marathon or playing music for an hour or just, you know, doing productive things. And I just, you know, watched episodes of Schitt's Creek instead. And so definitely some like mind chatter of how I'm spending my days, because as a person that likes to optimize, I'd like to think that I use most of my time really productively. And I think Carl's talked about a little of this in his own life and on a previous podcast about, you know, the desire to feel productive and busy versus just being okay with kind of hanging out. So I've been working on that a lot, of trying to find that balance between doing things that I enjoy or, you know, taking risks and doing new things, like doing this podcast. I think that about three times I was like, I don't know if I want to do the podcast. I'm anxious about it. It's like, everybody's like, just do it. Do things you're uncomfortable with. And but then also, you know, I don't think I can spend every minute of every day doing something that's, you know, air quotes, productive. So yeah, these are some of the questions that when you have the time and space to contemplate them, you just get, you know, new problems, new questions to work on. So I would say that's what I'm working on right now. How much time to be sort of bettering myself and working on passion projects versus just hanging out and relaxing.
So just an existential crisis, so no big deal?
Yeah, you know, just your typical mid-40s stuff. The friend I talked to before this podcast, we were just like, do you just wake up every day wondering, what is this life? What should I be doing? She's like, oh, totally.
Maybe the right answer to that is not to worry about that kind of stuff at all. And that came from our mutual friend, Doc G, who, when I first met him, I'm like, hey, yes, what do you want out of life? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I'm asking all these stupid questions that I now really hate. He's like, you know what? I just want to be. I'm like, holy shit. I don't think I understood it at the time, what he was telling me, but I'm like, it's okay just to sit there and like look at the trees or waves or whatever, stare out the window and just be content with that. Very difficult, easier said than done, but I appreciate that advice.
Did he steal that from Buddha or something like that?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. That sounds similar to something else.
I think he is. He might be a reincarnation or something like that. I don't know. Cool. Okay, let's wrap it up. Allison, what does your perfect day look like?
I think my perfect day would be waking up when I want to, which tends to be pretty early, but just not having that alarm. That has been something that I still appreciate, even though it's relatively new in my life. Going on a run on a beautiful trail for 5 or 10 miles, having an incredible brunch with loved ones, playing music or seeing music would definitely be a part of it. And yeah, beyond that, it's so weird. It's like the things you think about doing what could I do of all the things in the world if you have, you know, the relative like time and financial freedom to do them. And they're just like the same things that I wanted to do before, just more often. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much just doing my hobbies and, hanging out with people that I love and eating what I want to eat and going to sleep when I want to sleep. It's been strange how simplistic that's remained.
So how many times a week do you hit that sort of perfect day? Because it sounds pretty attainable the way you've designed your life.
I think pretty often. The question now has become more of, are there other things that I want to add into my life that could become other elements of a perfect day? Like when anything new, if I get more into doing podcasting or I'm working on writing a book, and some of those activities, they feel really great when I do them. And other times I get too much in my head of how I'm working on it, or, you know, when I'm going to finish it, or, you know, just kind of the product instead of the process. So I'm trying to work on trying things without having a lot of judgment about the outcome or if I enjoy it or to the extent that I enjoy it.
Very good. This has been an awesome conversation, and maybe we could have you back on and you could tell us how you've tackled and, you know, solve your existential crisis. Which we're all experiencing. We're waiting for that answer. But where can people find you if they want to check out more or follow along with what you're doing?
So I have my Instagram is Nest Egg Nanny, and I've just started posting on that account since I went to the conference, kind of my musings on, you know, phi life and life in general.
Perfect. All right, we'll link up to that so people can find it. Thanks a lot, Allison, and hopefully we'll catch up soon. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington, the balder host, and Carl Jensen is the cool, sexy one. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. it's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. Carl and I are just two guys with microphones that sit in my basement and talk. So we'll catch y'all next week. And Carl, I can't help but notice you have, I think that's your new jacket, but it looks like you got attacked by a paintbrush or something.
Yeah, I'm dressed very rough today. I was putting up and staining a fence yesterday. Moments before I came here, I was digging holes to plant new trees in our yard and filling this old shitty van we have with our old fence to drop off at the HQ for firewood. So I ran out the door to come here. Mindy's talking to me. I'm like, hey, I'm sorry, but I can't talk anymore. I'm already late. I have to be here. She's like, you're not going to wear that, are you? I'm like, yeah, I kind of am. There's no choice. I mean, does anyone watch us on YouTube anyway? Hopefully not.
A lot of people watch on YouTube. Yeah, a lot of people watch. Oh, man. And then, but the thing is, so Allison, can you tell how dirty Carl looks from here?
I can't. I just see a... like a gray
blob
situation. He's all, maybe
just a blob.
it's got some stuff going on. So I'm glad it's dark down here. Maybe we should turn down the lights on me and just have them illuminate you, Doug.
Yeah. So you can't really tell, which is great, but you could see us, but you know, it's just the lenses and the way we have the studio set up. We just look good all the time.
It's all AI filters. We actually look nothing like this in real life.
All right. So, Allison, we need to hear you talk. What have you been up to today so far?
So far, I went on a short run this morning. This is day five of marathon training. And I was just getting ready for this podcast.
Nice. How far is a short run right now?
I'm usually in like the 3 to 5 mile range. And then it's a 20-week training program, and then you gradually increase the mileage over time. So we're just at the very beginning.
All right. Have you done a marathon before?
I've done two. I did one in 2011 and one in 2021, and I'm hoping to do the third this fall.
Nice. So you know what you're getting into. Are you aiming for a specific time and just trying to improve and all that, or just along for, you know, no injuries?
Hoping for no injuries, and ideally would like to break 4 hours for the first time. This will be the third attempt to break 4 hours.
Wow. All right. That's awesome. That's a long time to run.